you're the other person, but I think we should do it anyway.
Okay.
And that is to
This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
This is Doug.
Welcome to The Infinite Consciousness this week. This is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening. Today we have with us Jim Buechler. He's written quite an interesting paper. It's not published yet, but so you get to be the first one to hear about it. Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your background, the name of your paper, where people can find you if they want to, you know, talk to you about it, and then we'll get started.
Well, let me see. I've got a PhD in paraphysics. The only PhD in paraphysics from an accredited university, as far as I know, in the world. My background is in physics. I have a master's degree in physics, and then I went up to the doctoral level in the history and philosophy of science before I added parapsychology to make it paraphysics. I've been teaching for about 25 years. I'm an associate professor of physics at West Virginia University in Parkersburg, West Virginia. I've been there, this will be my seventh year coming up. And I do research in what is called unified field theory. I basically work on a five-dimensional unified field theory that Albert Einstein worked on in the 1930s, and I'm updating it, modernizing it, and going from there, trying to unify general relativity and quantum theory. And in so doing, I've been able to basically define within the limits of science life, mind, and consciousness, and explain the paranormal and what happens when we die. I've written a book. The title of the book is To Die For, subtitled The Physical Reality of Conscious Survival, and it will be published this fall.
Really? That's good news to hear. I'm so glad.
Yeah, well, I decided after playing around with trying to get an agent and everything, I'm publishing it myself. So I have a few small ends to tie up, and then I'll send it off to the publisher within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
That's really great. Well, you know, this is one of my passions is consciousness, because I'll tell you something. I've interviewed about 30 people, maybe more,
yeah.
I don't know, all of who you would know and respect, I'm sure. But when I say, what is consciousness, I get 30 different answers. You know, and that's a problem when people are trying to put together a model, a physical model.
Oh,
so why don't we start out with that? When you say the word consciousness, what do you mean?
What do I mean? Well, first of all, I'm one of the few people I know of that bases consciousness and concept of mind on a concept of life. Now, life has never been defined either. We look at the biochemical reactions and electrical reactions in living bodies and organisms, but scientists for centuries, either few or a lot, given the historical consequences, believe that life is something beyond the biochemical reactions. They call it a vital force or a something like that, but for hundreds of years, and they've never discovered what it is. And so I define that first, and then I go from there to mind and consciousness. Everyone else is just trying to define consciousness outright without tying it to life.
So what is your definition
is
of that?
Okay. Well, since I work on a five-dimensional unified field theory, the there's a fourth dimension of space. You can talk about four-dimensional space and separate time, or you can talk about a five-dimensional space-time. You talk about a five-dimensional space-time from relativity theory, the fifth dimension is space-like. Only matter, as we know it, is confined to three-dimensional space. That's because matter is defined by electricity, the electrical field. An electrical field is a three-dimensional quantum. So basically, every point in a three-dimensional space is extended in a fourth direction, and that direction is magnetic.
Yeah,
so,
I tend to believe that.
Well, this is what a lot of the people who talk about psychic and everything, a lot of them tend to equate it to magnetics, and yet I can show from Maxwell's electromagnetic theory that the fourth dimension is magnetic. it's actually required by classical Maxwellian electromagnetic theory. And other people said this before, that idea goes back 130 years, but it's always been ignored because it wasn't necessary. But the way science is going now, it's becoming necessary.
Now,
so,
let me just say this before we go any further. Assume that some of the audience has no idea what you're talking about, so, and you're doing a good job so far, but just remember that to try to talk in kindergarten terms.
Mm-hmm.
Best you can.
That's why I'm saying that fourth dimension is magnetic. I think everyone can actually picture that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not our three-dimensional being, our reality for our five senses, is electrical and material. But there's also a physical part of our reality, and that physical part of our reality is purely magnetic, and that's where life, mind, and consciousness are.
Is that what you do? You mean by that that magnetism is what holds all the particles together?
Electricity holds material particles together. Yes.
Electricity does.
Electricity does. That's been understood by.
So, what does the magnetism do? Does it carry the intention?
Well, no. The biochemical reactions in our body, the actual motion of electrons orbiting protons and neutrons and atoms and molecules,
mm-hmm.
they cause a density pattern, a very, very complex density pattern in this higher dimension. Then the electrical reactions, say in our neurons and places in our body, they cause, over top of this field density pattern in the higher dimension, they cause an electromagnetic pattern, and that electromagnetic pattern is mind. So mind is a very, very complex electromagnetic pattern in our bodies, part of our bodies extended into the higher dimension.
Okay.
Then,
when you say mind, I'm gonna have to ask you a lot of questions here because
that's okay.
I'm separating
mind and consciousness.
When you say mind, is that the individualized thing, or is that the entire knowing of all there is?
It's the entire, well, I'd say the consciousness is probably the knowing of all there is. Mind is individualized.
Okay.
It's an electromagnetic pattern of our extended body in the higher space. Then through our five senses, our five normal senses, sight, hearing, smell, and touch, and taste,
mm-hmm.
There are... If we see an image, that causes an electrical reaction in our mind.
It's an awareness,
microtubules.
Mm-hmm.
Microtubules are small, tiny little electrical coils in the axons of neurons in our mind, and millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of them. And they get charged, and since they're coils, they cause little magnetic fields, just like a coil in your TV or radio or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then that causes a magnetic pattern, a very, very complex magnetic pattern, to superimpose over our mind pattern. And that purely magnetic pattern is consciousness. So the three levels. Life is basically a field density pattern. Then over top of that is an electromagnetic pattern, which is your mind. And over top of that, dealing with memory, is another very, very complex pattern, finer and more complex and more subtle, and that is consciousness.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear here. When you say consciousness, could you substitute the word awareness there?
Awareness, and especially awareness of self, is the
mm-hmm.
defining characteristic of consciousness. So it's not
okay.
just awareness, it's awareness of self.
All right.
Differentiating between you as a local physical being as non-local, which would be the rest of the universe.
Okay. How does the signal get from the original, what is the original intention? Where does that come in play?
The original intention.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mean before humans evolved, before consciousness evolved?
Well, you know, when you have an idea, there's a difference between thought and
mm-hmm.
an idea that comes in. You know, thought is something you think about and you follow through.
Mm-hmm.
An idea just drops in. from somewhere.
Right.
And I would call that maybe an intention. Where does that play in?
Something like that. That comes from the higher dimension through consciousness. See, the whole five-dimensional space-time is filled with a single field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that single field has different structures. One structure of that single field is our three-dimensional material universe.
Mm-hmm.
Another structure is the electrical field in the three-dimensional universe.
Mm-hmm.
Another structure is the magnetic field. So you have different structures in the different way the single field fits together as a structure, give us our material world and all the fields and everything in it, gravity, light, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so life, mind, and consciousness are just other structures within that single field. So our consciousness in our higher dimensional extension, it's an individual thing, but it's also a structure within the whole single field, the whole universe. So in that sense, that consciousness structure, magnetic structure in the higher dimensional field, is actually connected to the rest of the universe all at the same time.
Right.
And then
say life, you really mean like psi or the life force, right?
What they call the life force, the vital force. Yeah.
Okay.
Force is really the wrong word for it. But they don't have anything else. Science doesn't have anything else, and they don't know exactly what it is. And so they call it a force.
Okay. When information is conveyed from the field to... Mm-hmm. Mind, how do you think that's done?
Well,
you think it's done kind of like in signaling?
I call it pattern matching. Like, if I were to see you, I'd feel, if I'd see you, I'd see you with my eyes, then the electrical signals go from my eyes through the optic nerve to the brain. So go up the axons and the neurons, and that would fire millions and millions of the, what are called microtubules, little tiny coils inside the axons. It fired them in a specific sequence. And so I relate that, and that sequence would implant in as a magnetic memory in a higher dimension. So every time I see you, it would call up that memory, and that's how I recognize things. From that pattern that I recognize you the first time I ever saw you, or any other item. Now, so I have a specific pattern, a range of patterns in my mind and consciousness, sort of like the little magnetic divots on a videotape. This is sort of the same way we do on videotapes and audio tapes. The little magnetic dipoles are either zeros or ones. Same idea for computers, when we store memory in computers. And so it'd be like a complex number of bits and pieces. Extremely complex, more complex than a computer. But then I'd have an image of you that is in my mind and consciousness. And so maybe something would happen with you and you'd create a pattern in your mind. It would be transmitted through the field and then it'd make my pattern resonate. And so we call that what?
Where would you think the role of magnetic monopoles would play?
Pardon?
What do
magnetic
you think
monopoles?
The roles of magnetic monopoles would play?
I don't think there are any such things as magnetic monopoles.
Well, Bill Tiller says he's discovered them, and so has a group out of Japan.
A magnetic monopole, see, the thing with magnetism, as magnetism appears in three-dimensional space and normal time, magnetism is a direction, north or south. Now, to have a magnetic monopole, you'd have a north, but no such thing as a south. That'd be like having a right without a left or an up without a down. A monopole is not a material thing. It is a direction. And as soon as you have a direction in one direction, that automatically gives you a direction in the opposite direction. So in three-dimensional space, I don't think monopoles can exist. In a higher dimensional space, if you're in a higher dimensional space, that's a different thing.
What do you mean by that? Because we have to give it some credence. So if it were true that they existed, where would they fall into play, and what would they, what causation would they bring about?
I I couldn't really say, because that would be, you'd have to be into a higher dimensional space, according
into,
to my model.
Into mind or into
it would have to
think?
Be pure mind. It would be have to be pure mind and pure consciousness, absent from material bodies.
Yeah. Do you think...
Which is, I believe that's what happens when we die.
Do you think that the what do you, well, what comments do you have about the zero-point field in consciousness? Anything at all?
Well, there are problems with zero-point field. Now, I've been working lately in the field of cosmology. I've got an explanation of dark matter and dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the field of cosmology, dark energy, they know dark energy exists. And every cubic meter of space, as far as science knows right now, every cubic meter of empty space has the energy equivalent of 10 to the negative 26 kilograms of dark
mm-hmm.
energy. That would be a billionth of a billionth of a billionth, about a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a kilogram of dark energy equivalent, dark energy, for every cubic meter of space. Now, that's dark energy. That's measurable.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a small amount, a billionth of a billionth of a billionth. But at the same
mm-hmm.
time, the vacuum energy for every point in space, according to quantum theory, is 10 to the 120th power greater than that.
What is the
problem in science? Well, see, dark energy doesn't have anything to do with vacuum point energy, but they're both located at a point in space. Now, the way I would explain that within my model is that dark energy, like dark matter, is a field quantity. It's a product of the single field that occupies five-dimensional space-time, whereas the vacuum point energy is an absolute vacuum. It's the energy at every point in the vacuum, and I mean an absolute vacuum. Our normal definition of vacuum in science is just not having any matter. But I'm talking,
mm-hmm.
but every even empty space still has gravity, electric, and magnetic fields in it. When I say the absolute vacuum, I'm talking about the absolute vacuum with no field of any kind in it, no matter of any kind in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the vacuum point energy. It's difficult to realize.
Do you think that that could possibly be the source of all intention? Of the original intention?
Good. We're getting into higher levels of consciousness
mm-hmm.
that go beyond. See, one of the problems with developing a four-dimensional space, this was done over 100 years ago by scientists like William King and Clifford and others, and the philosophical argument against it was, well, if there's a fourth-dimensional space, why not a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, and so on? Well, it's possible then. Even my theory of a five-dimensional space-time implies the existence of a still higher sixth dimension that I wouldn't even want to get into. That's purely speculative. But
mm-hmm.
it could be that possibly, if you want to talk about intentions in an absolute form, it could come from those higher dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be purely speculation.
Do you think that that could possibly be also be the dividing line between duality?
No, I think
there's, you know, on one
line,
side there's like nothing, and on the other side there's light and stars and, you know, physical reality.
Well, the light and stars and physical reality are within the five-dimensional space. And then that five-dimensional space is separated into two parts. In science, everything is made out of, in present normal science, everything is made out of two things and only two things: matter, material particle, or field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about a normal vacuum, say in a vacuum tube or something, a vacuum inside a TV monitor or something, that's the absence of matter, but it still has field. So empty space, as we know, as I said, still has field. When I talk about the absolute vacuum, I'm talking about the lack of that, so it could be 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th dimension
mm-hmm.
and not affect us.
Interesting.
It's a distinction that's actually made by the ancient Greeks. The ancient Greeks did not develop, like Aristotle, Plato, they did not develop a concept of space because they thought to give space the name space would turn it from a no hyphen thing to a nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they just, you know, because a nothing is a something because it has a name. Nothing.
Right.
And so when I'm talking about the absolute value, I'm even talking about a no thing, not a nothing, beyond a nothing to a no thing. And it's a very, very subtle.
A no thing that's pure potential?
Yeah. That could be the source of some dualities. Most of the dualities, though, are the difference between what's matter and field within our physical reality. But there are some higher-level dualities that could be due to that.
But how can there be more than one duality? I mean, there has to be, like, a yin and a yang.
No, more than one, a higher-level duality.
Okay. Okay.
This is, like I said, in our normal five-dimensional space, if you have an up, you have a down, right, left, those are dualities. That's a lower-level duality. They're mm-hmm. common to our space. But if you get to that absolute vacuum where there's a possibility of a higher dimensions than five, the five necessary for our physics and our science and myths,
mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have an up. There's no reason why there'd be an up or a down. An up and down don't even have meaning.
So that's
a higher-level duality.
So would higher level just simply mean higher frequency, not up and down, but higher and lower frequency?
I don't like to use the word frequency. A lot of people use that, but a frequency denotes a material thing vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
Space. You can't have a material thing, you're beyond matter. You can't have a space where it be vibrating and you're beyond space. That's why I think it's not a nothing, it's a no thing.
Do you think that we live in a hologram?
You can imagine. Pardon?
Do you think we live in a hologram?
My five-dimensional field is, my four-dimensional space is very similar to Prebrum's and David Bohm's concept of a hologram. And when I talk about a five-dimensional single field occupying a five-dimensional space-time, that is very similar to David Bohm's idea of a holo movement. So yes, I would say that the hologram is the single field in four-dimensional space with time.
Now, would that mean, remember, I don't have your vocabulary, so I have to kind of talk in kindergarten language. But
no,
if we live
okay.
in a hologram, that would mean that we have vertical and horizontal lines of energy. Do you agree with that? Kind of like a basket weave?
There is that view when you include time. You go from four-dimensional space to time. Then those horizontal energies would more or less be how we progress through time. And that would fit more with quantum theory. Because those horizontal lines would be time, quanta progressing in time.
And do you think that everything stops at the quantum level, or do you think that the particles reside on something?
Okay, now, that has a great deal of philosophical import. When I was in college in the 60s and early 70s, the quantum level was the neutron, proton, electron.
Mm-hmm.
Then they developed quarks to get below the level of the proton. Now they talk, and you're talking about a millionth of a billionth of a meter, 10 to the minus 15th meters. That's a millionth of a billionth of a meter.
Mm-hmm.
Those are sizes we're talking about. That was the quantum limit when I was in college in the 60s and 70s. But now you have super string people and quantum loop people. They talk about 10 to the minus 38th meters as being the quantum limit, which is a billionth of a billionth of a billionth
mm-hmm.
of a millionth, about. So there's, when you say quantum limit, I'm not sure. I would say it never gets down to that level of quantum loops, 10 to the minus 38 meters. Reality goes down that far because it's continuous, but it doesn't stop there. The quantum limit to me is down just beyond smaller than protons and electrons and such.
Well, something would have to.
I think our material world is only slightly smaller than that.
If protons, electrons, and quarks and things oscillate, you know, move, what would make them move? If it was strictly particle, what would make them move?
Are you taking the quantum point of view where everything is particles, even electricity is particles? And that's more a quantum point of view.
Well, I'm just asking you what your opinion is.
My opinion is I believe that underlying the quantum limit, which I would put at the level of the electron, so on, you have continuity below that, and that is the continuity of the single field. Because those protons and electrons and neutrons and quarks and everything else are just various structures of the field. So the field is continuous. We never get down to the point. If you go to superstring theory and what's called quantum loop theory, where they're trying to develop theories of quantum gravity, they talk about space and time themselves are particles. But whenever you get down to the level of particles, if you have a particle sitting next to a particle, what's between them?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I mean, I guess what I'm asking
is, what you're saying.
Where is the God force or the source or the intention? Where is that?
You mean the three-letter word God? I don't like to use that because that's
non-science. Whatever word you want
to
use.
Two things I don't like to talk about that usually come up. What do I think is soul and what do I think is God? I don't like either of those. When I talk about the afterlife, I'm talking about the survival of consciousness. And I believe that once the body dies, the extension of five-dimensional space-time, the mind and consciousness cohere with each other and continue. Mm-hmm. So I talk about survival consciousness. I don't talk about soul. That's a religious term.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that depends on your religion. But whatever the soul is, consciousness must be a part of it. Consciousness and mind are part of it. But science only talk about consciousness and mind. Then we get to God. If I would want to speculate on what God is, I would say that our five-dimensional space-time is part of an infinite-dimensional universe. Now, it's not the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth dimensions within that infinite universe. It's maybe the 341st, 342nd. So our five-dimensional space-time is sort of adrift in an infinite universe, and I can't even understand a five-dimensional universe, let alone an infinite-dimensional. And
right, I know what you mean.
That would be... Now, that view, if you want to talk about God, you're talking about something beyond my comprehension or our human comprehension at this point that is probably infinite-dimensional. Now, that actually matches fairly well some of the Kabbalah views from the Middle Ages. God created the world. He took a small part out of himself, and he created our universe out of that small part of himself or herself, and made it our reality.
What
so
is
in a
the
sense,
difference
my
between
idea matches the Kabbalah?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
In a sense, then some of my ideas actually match some of the philosophies that have developed from the Kabbalah and other mystic points of view.
What is the difference to you between dimensions and parallel universes?
Again, there are different ideas of the parallel universes. If we live in an infinite dimensional world and our world, our universe is five dimensional, then there could be, within that infinite dimensions, there could be three-dimensional universes, ten-dimensional other universes separate within that infinity. That's one possible idea of parallel world. But that comes more from general relativity point of view. The other is a quantum point of view, and according to the quantum point of view, every particle at every moment in time has an infinite number of possibilities, or quantum states. Then it interacts with consciousness and other particles. It's entangled, in a sense. And so there are a million and million and million, or an infinite number of an infinite number of an infinite number of possibilities, according to quantum theory, to any world we live in. So that's called the infinite universe, infinite parallel universes.
Do you think
so? There are two different ideas.
We
talk about parallel universes.
Do you think
I tend to go with the relativistic theory?
Okay. Do you think that there are past and future lives, or do you think they're all happening simultaneously?
Well, from my three-dimensional space, I think there's past and future. But when you're in that higher dimension, you're outside of the four-dimensional space-time continuum. So
mm-hmm.
there is no such thing as time. You're beyond time, and you can see the past, the future, and present all at the same time.
Do you think that the past or the future can be manipulated?
To a very, 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 very small extent.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's kind of life is like a movie, pretty much, but it has small manipulations through mind or intention?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Pretty much, yes, I think that.
Yeah,
The idea of free will. I think the only thing that can manipulate the future, and it would be far more difficult for the past, but the only thing that can manipulate is the future is free will. Now,
what is free will to you?
Well, that's what I'm going to explain. Free will to me is something much more than I think it is to other people. Free will to most people is you walk to the refrigerator and you choose whether you're going to have a glass of milk, a glass of cold water, some type of a cola, or a beer. You know, you make that choice. That's free will. I don't think that's free will.
I don't either.
I think free will is something that's actually very, very rare. When you make a choice, but people may only do a few of these in their whole lifetime that really affects the whole universe.
Do you think we have complete free will? I mean, because if we did...
We do,
remember,
but no, we don't have complete free will. If I had complete free will, I would will myself to float up to the moon.
Right, and we wouldn't have had
we
messed
don't have
up scheduling.
Free will because we're restricted by natural laws.
Mm-hmm.
And a very famous scientist a long time ago, Simon Pierre de Laplace, was asked by Napoleon Bonaparte to explain Newton's theories. And so Laplace stated that if he were given the velocity and position of every particle in the universe, he could predict all future events. Now, that's called determinism. We live basically in our everyday world is deterministic. You only get to indeterministic on the quantum level. And I'm really not sure about that because of something called entanglement, so I'm not going to argue that.
Mm-hmm.
But
why don't you say what that is so that makes sure the listeners know?
Free will. Free will is something that differs from Newtonian determinism. And that's very difficult.
Why don't you tell my listeners what entanglement is so they'll know what you're talking about here?
Oh, boy. The scientists don't know. Entanglement is, this has been done in physical experiments just in the 1970s and 80s. Entanglement has been verified. And say, if you and I were entangled right now, this is quantum thing. In quantum, they talk about two electrons at a great distance apart or two photons at a great distance apart. But if you and I were entangled the same way two photons were, someone kicked me in the butt and you'd say, ouch.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though we're hundreds and hundreds of miles apart, when I'm kicked, you and I are entangled, so you'd feel the pain. And that's what entanglement is. Science can't explain it. Einstein called it a silly ghost-like force that he couldn't understand and didn't like the idea. The idea was developed by Erwin Schrödinger back in the 1930s. But quantum physicists and scientists use it all the time. They have an idea what it is, but they have no idea of the mechanism of how it works.
Do you think that it can cancel out thought because of entanglement, that thought can be canceled out?
I don't think it can cancel thought. I think when you have telepathy, mind reading mind, that is entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in Radin's book,
Entangled Minds.
Entangled Minds. And that's how they explain. I think entanglement is a very real thing. Science doesn't know the mechanism now, but I think entanglement can explain telepathy and psychokinesis and the other paranormal things.
It would certainly seem logical, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, this is the point. Science is down on the paranormal. And I'm going to make a statement, and this is a very true statement. Science will never ever accept the paranormal and related phenomena of an afterlife, no matter how much evidence is gathered, no matter how convincing that evidence is, because science has never developed the conceptual and intellectual tools or the vocabulary to handle these possibilities.
That's actually one of the purposes of this show, Jim, because even Bill Tiller told me that when he started doing it, that his department, the people that he worked with, wished he would go away. But it's real.
Well, I haven't been granted tenure at my school, so next year will probably be my last year where I teach. And it gets down to the reason, despite all the excuses they've made, they don't accept me, so I'm not getting tenure. And it boils down to my beliefs on the subjects.
I just can't understand it. I mean, if they think the effects, like Robert John's work, they deny that those effects were real because they were so minuscule and they couldn't be reproduced every time. Just a minute. Excuse me, I've had the flu. But, you know, those ping-pong balls move to the left whether they like it or not, and they're not taking into consideration cohesion of thought. It matters.
Exactly. Now, I can tell you why science will never accept it. No matter how convinced, there is convincing evidence. Ian Stevenson's work with reincarnation, I can't think of anything that's more convincing. And work of people like Grayson and Atwater and Moody with near-death experiences, I think they have convincing evidence. And Robert John and Brenda Dunn at Pear, which is now closed, and the work of
Puthoff
and Targ and others with remote viewing. There's so much evidence, and it's conclusive evidence. But science will never accept this because it does not have the conceptual tools to, and it's due to the first scientific revolution when René Descartes separated the world into two parts, mind and matter. He said, matter, mechanism, is for science, mind is for religion and spirituality. And even though it may not be politically correct, or people still go by that today. So anything paranormal, anything to do with the afterlife, if there's going to be any authority talking about it, it's going to be religious, not science. So science never made any concepts to deal with this.
Well, how did they deal with the fact that there's no...
Science has been redefined.
How do they deal with the fact that there's not really any mass on the quantum level? I mean, why can't they accept that?
Again,
they can't find
it. This is another problem. If you're talking about quantum theory can't explain mass. They're developing ideas a Higgs particle or a Higgs field carries mass. But in relativity theory, mass is curvature. It's equated to curvature of space-time continuum. So quantum theory has a problem not defining that. Relativity theory doesn't. So it's supposedly if they combine the two, then they will be able to explain it. That's what I try and do. That's my theoretical work.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing? Do you have a laboratory that you work in? What are you doing?
Oh, no. Just theoretical work ahead. Years ago, I had wanted to set up a paraphysical laboratory. I've even bought used equipment, oscilloscopes and different things. Hopefully someday set up a paraphysical laboratory, but now I'm just getting too old, so I don't know if I'd be able to do it. So my work is purely work of mine, theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm getting into explaining, I've actually been working past several months in cosmology explaining dark matter and dark energy because they relate to this theory.
Right. So what do you think happens to, I don't know the right word here, the knowing that we possess as an individual when the physical body drops away?
Well, as I said, there's four levels. The first level is the chemical interactions in the material world. The next level
is that like, you mean like neurotransmitters and things?
Vital force. Pardon?
You mean like neurotransmitters and things or something?
Yeah, neurotransmitters, all the chemicals in the body. That's just straight chemical reactions. Then what holds them together is the life pattern. Then what holds and organizes the life pattern is mind, and what holds the mind pattern together and organizes that is consciousness. So there are four levels. when a person dies, or any living organism dies, it destroys the life pattern, the chemical reaction's life pattern, but the mind pattern, the purely electromagnetic and purely magnetic pattern, the consciousness pattern remains, and so they mutually cohere. So I believe that basically what happens, when we die, the afterlife would be our consciousness and mind survive, which is our memories. They survive, but they're cut off from they're loose in the fifth dimension. They're
cut
off from the material world.
Merges back to the oneness Father is, or stays individualized?
Yes, and that's what is called enlightenment. If we see, it's a whole new thing. Our whole lives, we are taking in sensations through our five senses. So our mind becomes used to taking in those. When we die, the material body dies, so do our five senses. So the mind is expecting, the mind that survives, is still expecting input, sensation input. It's not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it do? First of all, it starts cannibalizing its memory. Like, you know, if you stop eating, you cannibalize the fat in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Same way, mind cannibalizes its own memories. It's called past life review. It's outside of time, or outside of the four-dimensional space-time continuum in that fifth dimension, so time is not the same, so the past life reviews happen all in a moment.
And do you think
then,
that happens, that it kind of stays together or kind of dissipates?
It stays together. Now, the next thing is that the mind still wants input. It's still expecting input. Where does it get it? It gets it through consciousness, because the consciousness is its connection, its sixth sense, its connection to the single field that makes up the whole universe. So consciousness is the connection of the mind to the rest of the universe, the continuity in that single field.
Okay.
So if the mind realizes, in a sense, its new position, it starts allowing information from the universe as a whole in through consciousness. So consciousness is, in a sense, the sixth sense, the organ of the sixth sense. Now, when it does that, the first thing the mind would feel or see, there's not even a word for it, experience would be the vast emptiness of space. And what fills all of space? Every point in space is filled by electromagnetic waves. So the mind would sense, if it gets far, it would sense all the wavelengths, all the frequencies away at the same time. Not visible, not only visible, but X-rays, radio waves, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So relating it to past experiences, this wonderful white light, because all the frequencies are white light.
Right, right.
This wonderful white light, because it's beyond the visible spectrum. And that's the white light that's associated with near-death experiences. Now, if it's reached enough level, it realizes what's happened, and it is aware of itself in this new position, and it becomes like an entity on its own. But only if the person before dying knew what to expect. If not, it may be returned. In other words, it would still be looking for material sensations and sort of try to get back on four-dimensional space-time and maybe get reincarnated or something.
Right.
Or become a ghost.
What role do you think the aura plays in the physical body?
Well, there are biophotons. Those are photons in the visible and invisible range are given off by our body. If nothing else, infrared, the heat, ultraviolet, such. I think probably when a person sees an aura, they're not seeing with their eyes. They're seeing the whole electromagnetic spectrum beyond the visible in high energy ultraviolet range and the lower energy infrared range. They're seeing with their consciousness. They're seeing a person with their consciousness via the five-dimensional field. And so they experience all the waves, including biophotons. But they don't have any way to describe that in their brain, so they say...
Right. Do you think it possibly contains the individuality in physical reality?
Well, it'd be part of the pattern. It would have to. Even if you have a child, personality, you're part of the consciousness. Part of that structure. So that structure would be part of that, of the electromagnetic structure, construction that goes beyond the visible in the fifth dimension. So, yes,
so what would that? What happens to that when the person dies, when the physical body dies?
That, I believe that survives.
In a,
The aura would remain, the material body and chemical reactions, chemical and mechanical reactions, they wither away, decay. But in a sense, that aura would represent the personality, the consciousness, the mind. Mind and consciousness, to me, are the whole body. They're not the brain. They just
I don't think it's the brain.
They're the whole body. So that would be the aura. The aura is just the outward appearance of that.
Do you think the brain's kind of like a computer, that it just interprets those signalings in the electromagnetic field?
More than that. If I had to describe this pattern, I'm talking about life being a mechanical pattern of density variations in the single field. Every person, if you could sort of spread it out to a two-dimensional equivalent, it'd be looking at the surface of the Earth at maybe a millimeter range. And that's life. You go to a finer pattern, electromagnetic waves, and that's trying to look at the whole surface of the Earth. For one single person, the whole surface of the Earth. That may be the micrometer range. And if you're trying to look at consciousness, it's the whole surface of the Earth at maybe a nanometer range. And that's really complex.
Yeah, it is.
And that's just for one person.
Kind of hard to
because
think about
if you go, funny thing is, if you look at just normal four-dimensional geometry, very simple stuff that was done over 100 years ago, long before relativity and quantum theory, they looked at the characteristics of a geometric characteristic of four-dimensional spaces. This was done in the 1870s by Simon Newcomb, William Clifford, and a lot of other mathematicians and scientists. And they discovered some really weird things, like if I could put my hand in this higher dimension, I'd come back and the right would be changed for left.
Now what?
This is all math. It's called a single polar geometry. If you put your hand into a higher dimension of space and then brought it back into a three-dimensional space, you'd have two, say you put your left hand in, you'd have two right hands that comes back. Left is swapped for right. It's called a single polar elliptical geometry.
Interesting. I've never heard that before.
Sure you have. It's called, if you do it just in two-dimensional space, it's called a Möbius strip. Have you ever seen a Möbius strip?
No. Tell me about it.
If you take a long strip paper, maybe 8 inches long and an inch wide, and you turn it around a circle, but put it through one twist, you can trace all the way around the paper.
Oh, okay, I know what you're talking about.
A Möbius strip.
The name.
Well, figure that. The higher dimension, four-dimensional space, is like a Möbius strip. So it only has one pole. It has a north pole, no south pole. See, this is where you might get into your monopoles for magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
It only has one pole. So if you stick something in the higher dimension and it comes back in the lower dimension, everything gets twisted around by 180 degrees. Right changes for left.
Interesting.
See, though, the people doing superconducting theory in higher dimensional physics today don't realize that, but that was done 130 years ago.
I don't really understand super string theory. Do they say that that...
They don't either.
Is that supposed to be the particles that hold together physical reality? I don't understand that.
Yeah. They don't either. The superstrings, I'm an anti-superstring person. The superstring theorists don't really understand it either, so they've had to make up all their own mathematics to explain it. And they're the only people that know their mathematics.
Oh, I see.
That's why they say it's a theory that's 2 centuries before its time, because it'll be 2 centuries before they'll either be able to test it physically to see if it works, or they'll be able to solve all the mathematical problems that are with it.
What do you think about gradients of consciousness?
Gradients?
Conscious awareness.
A bunch of them.
No, have you read David Hawkins' book?
No, I haven't.
Well, through some
I'm not so much in my own theory anymore. I don't hardly read that many other books.
Through kinesiology, he says that he's determined that there's 11 levels of human awareness. Not just, and I'm not talking about you know, whether you're awake or asleep. I'm talking about how you view the world. You know, like a fundamentalist, if you try to tell some fundamentalist about this, they are not going to hear you, no matter how much proof you give them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he probably means more like 11 basic, but I think there are probably shadings within those 11.
You think there's
probably more than 11, all total.
You think so? So what do you think happens, because you do write in your book a little bit about near-death experiences, and what do you think happens when the soul dies? Does it realize that it's dead, typically? Does it go somewhere and hang out for a period of time?
Yes, it hangs out in the fifth dimension, sort of like an old movie I saw a long time ago. It sounds like science fiction, but I think nature is bringing us back where science now is going to look more like science fiction. In a sense, it floats in a higher dimension. You've got consciousness. Electromagnetic and magnetic patterns are mutually coherent. That's the survival of consciousness. How you want to define the soul, be my guest. I'm only talking about survival of consciousness. I just know that whatever the soul is, it has to be have some type of consciousness. Now, if while you're alive, you reach a high enough state of enlightenment. I like that word, enlightenment. If you reach that high enough state so that when you die, you've already had the experience, the intuitive experience of that higher dimension, so that when you die, your new existence as a mind-consciousness complex in five-dimensional space-time realizes what it is, where it is, and its present position, then it can learn and progress in its connection to the rest of the universe through consciousness.
So it doesn't remain stuck, so to speak.
So it doesn't remain stuck. But right, but if it gets up there and it doesn't realize where it is and what it is and how it is and what its condition is, the mind is still going to be wanting input, expecting input from the four-dimensional material world, so it might stick. It might be reincarnated, it might be a ghost, an apparition, whatever.
Right,
but it might stick
to
the four-dimensional space-time or three-dimensional space.
What do you think happens when, you know, I had this experience. It was almost like I blinked my eyes one day, and I wasn't a seeker. I didn't know any of this existed. I thought people who did this stuff was crazy. And I blinked my eyes, and suddenly I was different. What happens?
I would guess a low-level enlightenment spontaneous.
What makes
now,
that happen?
Now, there are people historically who have become enlightened, sort of quantum effect. You know, it's a quantum variation in there. It just happened. Murphy's Law and quantum theory thrown together. But some people do reach spontaneous enlightenment. Enlightenment.
Well, I know it's
like
real because it happened to me.
Well, it's an experience of, I would say, from my model, my theory, that is a direct, intuitive experience of that fifth dimension without dying. Without the near-death experience. I think that's what, whether you're talking about Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, when he reached enlightenment, or you're talking about Jesus being enlightened, I think they experienced. They didn't think it through logically. They experienced it intuitively and thus knew what it was.
Interesting.
I'm trying to reach it logically and intuitively.
That's a hard thing to do, too.
Logically.
I can tell you it's a hard thing to do. Because it's like trying to describe an orgasm to somebody that's never had one, you know.
Yeah,
you never had the feeling, it's hard to describe it.
Yeah.
It's hard.
When I was in college, again, like you, long before I started studying this stuff, I was sitting in the student unit at Akron University one day back probably about 67, 68. I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, and I didn't do drugs of any kind. Nothing more serious than an aspirin once in a while if I had a headache. I was sitting there one day with a couple friends of mine, Sheila and Brenda, and I spaced out. I was just staring off in the student union across the union as people were walking by, and I spaced out. I like to say I saw something, but it's more I experienced it because I can't describe it.
Mm-hmm.
What I experienced was like a totally black field, to the best of my recollection, with points, brilliant points of light that were connected by white line.
Interesting.
But, and the next thing I knew was Sheila was slapping me around. Jim, come out of it.
Did you get bliss with it?
I had the feeling, and again, this is 5 years before I ever even read about any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a physics major, as bad as you can get. I was a physics major. I was about a junior then. I had the feeling that I had just seen, or rather sensed, the whole universe at one
right.
time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that may have been a low-level spontaneous enlightenment.
Yeah, I did too. Had you been through some bad times?
Actually, then, no. That's what's weird. I wasn't through those bad times then.
Because most people that have it have been through, like, some dark nights of the soul.
No, I can't remember. Well, I've had bad times. Father died when I was young, things like that. But
mm-hmm.
I haven't really had any traumatic experiences.
Interesting.
You know, average deaths in family, things like that, that everybody
mm-hmm.
has. But nothing that I would say is out of the ordinary, no.
Interesting. Because a lot of people do for some reason. I did. Anyway.
I've had an extremely low-level near-death experience that is more what some people call a fear-death experience. I thought I was going to die once, but it only lasted about 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have a full near-death experience, but I sort of blacked out for a few seconds. My senses went. I could see. I couldn't hear. Everyone yelling sounded like they were in a tunnel 100 yards away. I totally lost my smell. I couldn't smell. Have you ever heard of the Ramstein air disaster?
Mm-mm.
Ramstein, Germany, 1988, 89, something like that.
Mm-mm.
At the end of the air show at Ramstein Air Base in Germany, near Kaiserslautern, a big air base called Ramstein. It's the biggest U.S. air base in Europe. And every year they'd have the big air show. The last act was the Italian Tricolore. You know, they're like the Thunderbirds here in the U.S., the Blue Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing something called the Pierced Heart. And five of the jets would, with the red, white, and blue smoke coming out, made a heart formation. Then the last jet came through at the right angle, making the arrow through the heart, so it's Pierced Heart. He came in too low. The front end of his jet clipped the wings of one of the other two jets, sent two jets screening off, and his jet came directly in the crowd. Well, I was in direct line with his jet. Direct line with his jet. And I thought
wow.
I was going to die, and I just sort of blacked out for a few seconds.
Wow. Well, we're about out of time, Jim. Tell the listeners where they can find you.
Best you thing to do, I may be changing my URL, so I won't give people that. If they want to contact me, the best thing is just to Google my name, James E. Beekler. You'll find out a lot of things I put on the internet. And
now, how do you spell that, Beekler? Just so they make sure.
Beekler, B-E-I-C-H-L-E-R. First name James, middle initial E, and Beekler. There are a couple other Beeklers on there. So if they just Google my whole name in parentheses, they'll get a lot of my stuff because I've published a lot on.
Interesting stuff, too, I must say.
Yes, what would we do without Google?
I don't know. That's how I found you, honey. Well, thanks so much for being on. Really interesting. I hope you'll come back sometime.
Sure. Anytime. Just give me a call.
All right, dear. Have a good weekend. Thanks a lot.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
This is Dr. Richard Moylan.
Dr. Richard Moylan.
You're listening to the Universal Spiritual Connection.
Reverend
Leilani.
Reverend
Leilani.
Reverend Leilani.
Reverend Leilani.
Hi there. This is Christoph Goes. You'll be listening to new tracks from my new album Turning Inside right here on BBS Radio. Because if it's not mainstream, it's on BBSRadio.com.